Blog Talk Radio.
He's got the whole
from Chicago, saying he got the whole world in his hand. Tonight, I want to talk about Rahm Emanuel. I want to appoint him to China as an ambassador. Now, what I'm saying, the Black Caucus, the City Hall Black Caucus, they say he's a good man for it. After 16 shots and a cover-up, and they find out that ain't nobody able to be the ambassador but Rahm Emanuel. And Obama's in there, and every Ottoman, every Black Ottoman in that caucus haven't did nothing against this crime, haven't did nothing in this neighborhood. All of them is a bunch of sellouts. Every one of them Ottomans is a sellout. All of them is making money, but they ain't doing nothing for the Inglewood, Lundell. None of the Ottomans are doing nothing for this neighborhood. Even on the Gold Coast, they robbing and killing. Because they're too busy filling their pockets up. Rahm Emanuel came on and said he don't know what happened. After a year later, they had to sue the city to get the truth out of what happened to the boy who got shot 60 times in a cover-up. And you tell me you want him to be the ambassador of China? That's go to show you. And let me tell you who all involved in it. Rahm Emanuel involved in it. Now, he want to be it. You got all the Ottomans, call my day the Black Caucus. They need to get out of there. Obama's involved in it, and you know Biden involved because he's the one getting it. What I'm saying to you in Chicago, did nobody come to the aid of Lightfoot when the police union jumped on her? Did none of the Black Ottomans, call my day Black Caucus, didn't come to the aid of Kim Fox when they lied on her? So we got a bunch of Ottomans in the City Hall rubber stamp. Now, they said, this is what they said. Well, we think Rahm Emanuel would be good for the ambassador. How can he be good? And it took a year to find out who killed McDonald, who killed him. It was a year and a cover. Obama got, got on TV and said he don't know what happened. They had to sue the city just to get the camera. It was a cover-up. 16 shots and a cover-up, and it's still a cover-up. Rahm Emanuel did not be the ambassador of China. I wish somebody hit me. You might need to write some letters. I'm going to find out what letter you need to write to the Congress or the Senate. Now, they don't need me. And let me tell you, I don't know what what the senator's doing. I don't know what Danny Davis did. I don't know what the Black Panther did over there. I know they ain't voted for Ron Manuel to be the ambassador to China. I know. But that's a setup. When Ron Manuel came to Chicago, Obama said he's a good man, and the people voted for him. He turned his back on the Black people. And now the Black caucus, a man got shot over in Inglewood, and the Black caucus ain't said nothing about the man. Man was in one room, the police in another room shot the man dead. They could have shot him in the arm, they should have shot him in the leg. One of the things I'm saying tonight, we got to stop the killing and save the babies. What's going on in these wars is the Ottomans, Inglewood. They talk about Lundell, but they don't do nothing to help Lundell because they in a racket. And when the FBI or somebody busts them, they're in a racket. They said the Black Caucus endorsed Ron Manuel. You endorsed the man that covered up the shooting for a whole year, and then we had to go to court to sue just to get the camera where the police shot him 7 times. 17 shots on the cover up. And they still couldn't. Ron Manuel ain't fit for a dog catcher. I want to say that. He's not fit. And I want to tell those Black Ottomans, Uncle Tom, they passed Uncle Tom, they sell out. And right now in 2021, we don't need no sell out. If you're going to business it all, do what you're supposed to do. And one young lady, Sister Stephanie Coleman, is the only one fighting, and ain't nobody helping her. They don't want to help her because she's young. And she talking about changing up the neighborhood. But most of those Black Ottomans is in the bed. They're on committees. They're on different committees. They done took all kind of money. And they ain't doing nothing to help community. When you talk about Inglewood, Lundell, and all these wards, like downtown, the wards downtown, the first ward, the second ward, they robbing and killing down there. Because the Ottomans is not doing nothing but getting a paycheck and going down there on Wednesday arguing. They're not doing nothing to help. I'm going to say this tonight, talking about politics. The politics in Chicago is so stinking. I mean, these Black politicians don't do nothing to help the Black community. They get the money. They get the contracts, you know, for the camera. They got a contract right now that you go down on the lake. You got to pay to go down there on the lake. These politicians did that daily. And lots of them involved. And the same little group talking about we the Black Caucus. Tell me what the Black Caucus did for the Black community lately. They haven't did anything, but they come out yesterday to support Ron Manuel to be the ambassador of China, and he's not qualified with his lying self. This is what Malcolm said. I'm going to play this in, but I got to say, we got a serious problem. Every alderman on that committee need to go because they not standing up for the community. They're standing up for them. If it's a dollar for the liquor license, they do it. If it's a dollar where they can get a cabin in the store, get a liquor license, a grocery store, they'll take the money. They don't meet with the Black community. That is all these contracts, this building going on in the 8th Ward, in the 7th Ward, 9th Ward. They ain't asking the people. The Ottomans getting the money in the back door. So they just putting buildings up. And that's what happened in Pullman. What's happening in Pullman? Where all the jobs at in Pullman? For the people that live there, it ain't happening. The Black Caucus, which we call, the Black Caucus is the Black rip-off of Chicago. There's no way that Inglewood, Lundell should be in this shape if these Black politicians are sitting down City Hall getting their perk fat, try to help the community. And they're gonna come after all what happened. We had to work a whole year to make a manual to do the tape. Ron McDonald shot 16 times. Somebody got paid. Somebody say, even his uncle say, it's all right. for Ron Manion to be the ambassador. No way. You tell me you can't find nobody better than Ron Manion that ain't been lying to the people for a whole year. Obama put him in there. And a lot of people undercover supporting him. Lots of congressmen supporting him. That don't make it right. That don't make it right. It's a slap in black folks' face. It's a slap into racism and white supremacy. And this is what Malcolm said about it, and I believe it.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro. Back during slavery.
I want to say, Malcolm, you ain't go to slavery. You go right down to the city hall today. You got the house Negro still there trying to cover up for Uncle Tom, trying to cover up for the master. That's what happened, and black ministers don't want to say nothing. Black politicians is covering up, and ain't nobody saying nothing. So the people getting the rotten deal, people being shot, people being hijacked, caring about that. They caring about that almighty dollar. And this is what Malcolm said.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro. Back during slavery, there was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food because he left. They lived in the attic or the basement, but still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, if the master said, we got a good house here, the house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you can tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away, let's escape, let's separate, that house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about, I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school. You're nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? Where you gonna get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa. On that same plantation, there was the field Negro. The field Negro, those were the masses. There was always more Negroes in the field than there was Negroes in the house. The Negro in the field caught hell. He ate leftovers.
in the house they ate high up on the hog. The Negro in the field didn't get nothing but what was left of the insides of the hog. They call them chitlins nowadays. In those days, they call them what they were, guts. That's what you were, a gut eater. And some of you are still gut eaters. The field Negro was beaten from morning till night. He lived in a shack, in a hut. He wore cast-off clothes. And he hated his master. I say he hated his master. He was intelligent. That house Negro loved his master. But that field Negro, remember, they were in the majority. And they hated the master. When the house caught on fire, he didn't try and put it out. That field Negro prayed for a wind, for a breeze. When the master got sick, the field Negro prayed that he died. If someone come to the field Negro and said, let's separate, let's run, he didn't say, where are we going? He said, any place is better than here. You got field Negroes in America today. I'm a field Negro. The masses are the field Negroes. When they see this man's house on fire, you don't hear these little Negroes talking about our government is in trouble. They say the government is in trouble.
One of the things I want to say, Malcolm said so true. Blacks have turned away from each other, and they're trying to get in the belly of the white man and be like him, and they don't want to be themselves. Then nobody from Africa, then nobody from Europe come from Africa. People came from Africa, were from Africa. Then no Haitians come. All people that come from Africa were black. You know, Italians come, no Jews come. So why would we be separated? And I'm upset with the black order. I'm talking about they got a black caucus. They can't even tell the truth about what happened a few years ago when the boy got shot 60 times in the cover-up. And it took independent people to sue the city to get the tape and show what a cop shot the man 16 times. And Ron Manuel covered it up. And that's what happened. Now, I don't know if you went to sleep. Call the White House. Call the Congress. Call somebody. I'm going to get a number before this week out that you can call somebody. If somebody got the number where you can call the Washington, please let me know on the air where I can give to where you can call the Washington and say the Ron Manuel should not be an ambassador to China, ambassador to nothing. He should be an ambassador to outdoor toilet. That way he need to be an ambassador too. This is Dr. Henry Clark. That's the subject that
I was under the persuasion of great babies, my great grandmother, one of the great loves of my existence.
That was Dr. Henry Clark was telling about what's been going on.
What a magnificent day, beautiful climate here in New Hampshire. But I first want to thank my very precious brothers and sisters for the dinner last night. It was just magnificent. Let's give it up for you all being so kind. Sadie and all of the other brothers and so forth. We had a good 2 or 3 hours wrestling with magnificent questions, difficult questions, painful queries. But we always had a smile on our face. And the same is true this morning. I was able to spend some good time with the SEED program, I think it was. The summer enrichment at Dartmouth. Who was it? It was Sister Erica. Absolutely. And we want to thank you and Sister Rachel, too. I know you left them both of those wonderful students doing magnificent work. But it's just another example of the Dartmouth students who are at work with Paideia in a variety of different ways. And it's an everyday affair. Paideia is not some abstraction. Education is not some abstraction. It's something to be enacted every day. We talked with Gerda about freedom and life must be reconquered every day. So it is with love. So it is with courage. So it is with sensitivity, empathy, compassion, and so on. It is a profoundly human affair, which is to say it is shot through with failure and faults and foibles. But so what? We bounce back, as it were. Try again, fail better, as Samuel Beckett says. Let us move now to chapter 4. And, of course, it's going to be over against that very powerful chapter 4 in Dusk to Dawn. But Josie, in many ways, Josie is one of the most important characters in this text. She's in some ways a metaphor of Black culture. She's in some ways a symbol of what happens when progress, capital P, moves forward in a technological sense in a variety of so-called enlightenment conceptions that are casting light in certain corners but unable to cast light in other corners. So because Du Bois begins this text saying, I'm concerned with the underworld, the underbelly. I'm concerned with the underground of our lives as well as Americans, the American Democratic Project. He always wants to stay in tune with those folk whose humanity is overlooked, whose humanity has been rendered invisible. Josie becomes important. Now, this is not just a question of gender, though it is importantly a question of gender. The very fact when Du Bois engages in his descent into his analysis of life on the chocolate side of the veil, of the black sides of town, the black sides of the city, the black sides of the country, that he accents a woman, a young woman. And where does he begin in his epigraph? From one of the greatest poets and playwrights of freedom, Mackay Heights, in modern times, Friedrich Schiller. I don't know how many people have had a chance to meet Schiller. There is no Dostoevsky without Schiller. Schiller was the intellectual mentor, not personally, he never knew it, but it's his work. Schiller's Aesthetic of Letters on Education. Schiller's plays, when he was 21 years old, he wrote one of the most famous plays in the history of modern Europe called The Robbers. And this particular poem is from where? Where is it from? Somebody tell me right quick. Where is this? Where are the words from the epigraph from? Anybody see it? Find it. Find it. We don't want to waste time. You're paying too much money for the go to Dartmouth to take time. Somebody yell it out for me. Where is it from? Germany, what's the name of the play? Anybody know? The Maid of Orleans. Who is the Maid of Orleans? Somebody tell me. Joan of Arc, my dear brothers, absolutely right. Who was a Joan of Arc? Early 15th century, 19 years old, she's executed. She exemplifies the unbelievable heroic culture of France in the Anglo-French Hundred Years' War. During the Lancastrian phase of that war, when Henry V in England and Charles VII are it about Joan of Arc? She's from peasants. She's non-literate. It's bewitching her. Think you're ready for Halloween?
Look at your costume!
Think again.
Question. That is my question. Professor Clark has stated that this is the first form of literary intelligence that surfaced around 1250, and in fact, it did not, and I'm curious how he is maintaining that.
All right. It is the first book, and it's a book of folklore, and we really don't know whether Homer wrote it, whether Homer was man or woman. It's the first book to come known, basic to the West, in a form that we could study and conjecture about, and it emerged at the time Europe was beginning to show some intellectual maturity. And if you deal with this, you have to deal with what Professor Lesbitt accused me of, not paying attention to historical chronology. And she read into my text, into my numerous guides and curricula, lecture notes, you know that I'm a specialist on chronology. I know that one comes first and two comes second. But what I was trying to get across is that in the 8th century to the 12th century, so the intellectual emergence of Europe, at a time, Egypt was in its 23rd dynasty and dying after nearly 10,000 years of some forms of organized society, Europe intellectually was just being born. And I further maintain that Europe in general had nothing to do with the creation of Rome and Greece. And yet, the challenge of Rome and Greece predated Europe. Because they were scattered tribes, and the challenge of Rome and Greece brought them together, and they became a people strong enough to create a state. If anyone got any information to the contrary, takes the information to the contrary. I maintain that there was no Europe. You're giving Europe credit for things that happened before the first European war. Schuller lived in a house and had a window. And I'm saying you have not read, not just Matthew, Joe Matthew, his son disciple, Alvin B. Chachwa, signs and symbols of primordial man, the origins of religion, and his extensive work on Freemasonry. You're not read the American disciple of Massey, Albert Boyd Kuhn, who is this king of glory, one of the best written books on the Christ story, when he proved that the basis of European spirituality was taken directly from Africa.
Professor Rogers, would you like to follow on your question?
No one is actually maintaining that literary Greek culture pre-existed any number of Near Eastern cultures. Again, I find it a bit curious.
I don't accept Egypt as Near East. I accept Egypt as part of, physically part of Africa, created by the Africans from the South.
Even if I concede or admit or agree with you that Egypt is part of Africa, what I'm about to say...
There will be order. Thank you. There will be order. Thank you very much.
Do I detect some disagreement? My point was going to be that the most recent scholarship about the genesis of those two oral epics, the Iliad and the Odyssey, points in fact in another direction to influence, and that is, in
that the Hittite Empire documents we can read very easily, and there may well be independent confirmation of the historicity of some form of a Trojan War in those documents. And so what I'm really asking is, why is it that we're just really looking in one direction when we're talking about the origins of Greek civilization?
Professor Clark? When Alexander entered Egypt, he wrote home to his mother and said that he had last reached the land where the Greek gods began, Apollo and Zeus. And he wanted to consult one of the great African teachers, the oracle. And the oracle asked, how old is this man? He said, 32. 20 years. Maybe he'll be wise enough to ask me a question that I care to answer.
Everyone who reads the book to judge what I did.
you look, but it don't tell you who you are. The proper name of a people must always relate to land, history, and culture. I did not say Cleopatra was black. I quoted someone else who inferred that. My defense of Cleopatra was not on her blackness, but on the, no matter whatever she was, born in Africa, she defended, she was the, her manipulation of Mark Antony and Caesar kept the worst aspect of Roman rule from the backs of Africa. I defend her as an African national. And that's a good defense, no matter what she did with her wares in and out of bed, there's a whole lot of people got that for it.
Professor Lefkowitz, you may ask a question of Professor Clark.
Oh, what a wonderful world.
Let us take the background for what I've been speaking about. And let us take a timeline in order for you to follow me and understand what I'm speaking about. Based upon available records to us, and since I have no contact with outer space, with angels or gods or goddesses, and I have no Ouija board that I deal with, or tarot cards, or tea leaves, or anything like that. Believe me, I don't deal with anything like that. I'm lost when it comes to anything like that. I must deal with documents of the past. My records, and when I speak to you, it is because I have gone to Egypt, to Israel, to India, to you've named wherever they got it. And I've gone to see for myself.
Feel alive, wounded and bent. Every breath we take, we feel alive.
Because going into libraries and museums are not enough for me. I am an inquisitive person. I go, and when that's not enough, I start digging. I get pick and shovel, I get others with me to dig and find that which may have been buried over thousands of years. To find the truth. There, to me, there is no truth that's permanent. Truth today may be changed tomorrow. What is right today may be proven wrong tomorrow. Therefore, anything today, I am open for change tomorrow. In such sense, let us take the oldest to the youngest in terms of documentation of what I've been speaking about. Basically, I will be speaking about the religiosity or the form of religiosity that came down the Nile, not going up the Nile. When I speak of the Nile, I'm speaking from Uganda in terms of the White Nile, Egypt in terms of the Blue Nile. The spirituality that I'm going to speak about comes from the people from what would be today's Northeast Zaire, ancient Manicongo. I am dealing with the smallest people on record, the Twa and the Hutu, which Europeans call Pygmy. Along with those people, those who migrated from the area, Grimaldi, that went to the most southern tip today, which was called at one time Kurumotaba, and that's the name I still call it, in spite of who wants to call it other names today. Because if it was good enough, the ancient Africans thought of this, the name of their country, Kurumotaba, I still call it Kurumotaba, in spite of the fact that the Portuguese said that the woman Kurumotaba was a bad man, therefore some Africans feel that they must change the name to suit and to satisfy the modern world. I am still calling Kurumotaba. I will deal with the Grimaldi as well, people called Koi Koi and Tabahari. I reject the name Bushman and Hottentot. Coming from the center of Africa again, down north, down the Nile, the same set of people I will call as they have called themselves Sebenitus when they are in Egypt. Those are the people give us the oldest documentation of theosophy anywhere in the entire world. You can bring from me anything you want here. And Babylon, Sumner, and any one of them. I am from Missouri when it comes to this. Show me some evidence. Show me any artifact from Babylonia and Sumner that is more ancient than these people, and I will change my talk and apologize to everyone from now on that I was in terror. Until such time, all the universities of the world, black, white, pink, green, technicolor, rainbow, could go to hell. Therefore, until you bring a book of theosophy older than the book of the coming forth by day and by night, and present it to me so I can look into it, then it means that the Africans along the Nile have the oldest collection of spiritual works, otherwise called a Bible. The word Bible is a collection of spiritual writings. And that's all it means. You don't say a collection of facts, a collection of truth, nothing. It's just a collection of spiritual writings. It could be lies, it could be the facts, it could be anything. A collection of spiritual writings. That's all it means. Doesn't it mean that if you went to the bathroom and you need a piece of paper, you didn't have any other paper, use the Bible. That's all it is, a collection of writing. Why another one? No, that's all. You people scared to touch it. You scared to fall on the ground. And what? If it falls over, take it off. And if you use it again, any other book fall, you're not worried about this. See, you make this, you explain yourself, you imprison yourself with these nonsensical things.
Coldplay.
Such as Bogash, Budge, even Brett
divinity on others, Marriott, Champollion, and all the other fellows who dabbled in Egyptology. The next closest to that in terms of age that is being used of the three religions that played a part in our thinking process would be that of the Hebrews, or Yehuda, or Judah, or Jehovah, any way you want to call it, it's okay with me. I am not worried about semantics today. That would be about the best. This is the year 5000 and that of the Hebrew calendar. That would include from the time of the mythical Adam and Eve. And that we could tell you why we don't need to deal with that, because Adam and Eve are concepts that came out of the Hebrew Torah, from the Hebrew Sanhedrin, that is the educational center of the Hebrews. And that did not open its doors until about 700 before the Common Era, attributed to an African called Moses, because he said that Moses was born in the city of Goshen in Egypt around the time of Egypt. Tutankhamun was on the throne at that time. Akhenaten had already died about 50 years before Moses was supposed to be born. So we don't even have to worry about time, because that is the 18th dynasty. Yes, they, in history, comparatively speaking. Because Abraham himself did not bring any theory to Judaism. The superstar of Judaism is Moses. He's the theoretician that is going to give us most of the basic things. Forget about Genesis, because Genesis was the last book in the Hebrew Bible. So it's the first book. They had four books. And Rabbi Agrippa and Rabbi Hillel argue the point that how we are going to have an Exodus, leaving someplace, and we didn't get here yet. So he added a book called Genesis, beginning. Okay. The second book in terms of this, the timeline, would be Christianity. Comes approximately 1992 years ago, minus four. Because the Christians forget to put the 4 years that Justinian dropped when he had the Ethiopian Ezra to reform the calendar so that it would have to jump at the proper Jubilee year. They had to chop out 4 years. So sorry for you. Instead of Jesus being 33, he's in fact 37. So for that, and with that one better, the Southern brothers, you will not have 33 degrees anymore. You will have to add 3-4 more to make it 37. You have a lot of trouble with the Sunday or any other Sunday. I will take care of that. Islam, the youngest of the three, those three. Christianity, Judaism, Christianity, Islam. Islam is the baby of the three in terms of years. You see, we talk a lot and we wish we want things to be what we want it to be, and we make it that way. Because we seem to forget that Muhammad, M-O-H-A-M-E-T, not M-A-D, no M-E-D, Muhammad ibn Abdullah, the grandson of an Ethiopian woman, member of the Korish people, a tribe I prefer to say, it was not until 622 of the Christian calendar, Christian year, that he challenged the religion in Mecca, driven out of Mecca, with his three companions, Akhlat, Kubat, Ibn Rabat, otherwise called Bilal, Umar the Great, and Abu Bakr. They fled to the outside of the city of Medina, northwest of Mecca. We are there at the west of Yathrib, and Yathrib established the religion they call Islam. Chronological order in which these religions or philosophical concepts or way of life, you call it anything you want, a semantics, it doesn't matter to me. As long as it means what it means.